Welcome to Digital Garden State, a podcast by the New Jersey Health Information Management Systems Society.
Welcome to the New Jersey Health Information Management Systems Society podcast series, where we discuss emerging trends in healthcare technology and their impact on our industry. New Jersey HIMSS is a consortium of healthcare professionals, providers, and vendors who are committed to promoting constant improvement in the use of information technology within the healthcare industry. I'm your host, Mike Fortino, current New Jersey HIMSS board member and account executive with Galaxy Solutions. So as usual, before we get started, I want to remind our membership that our chapter is supported by some amazing companies, and without their sponsorship, we could not deliver on their mission, on our mission of healthcare technology advocacy and learning. Today's podcast episode is a continuation of our customer story series where we highlight one of those great sponsors. And today's sponsor is Comply Assistant. And today we have two guests from Comply Assistant, Jerry Blass, President and CEO, and Martin Von Grossman. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning, Michael.
How are you guys doing today? Good?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, we're doing great. Thanks, Mike.
That's awesome. So Jerry, as I said, is president and CEO, and they provide GRC software and healthcare cybersecurity solutions to over 100 healthcare organizations of all sizes, focusing on HIPAA, HITECH, Omnibus, PCI, NIST, NIST, and other federal and state healthcare regulations, right? Jerry currently co-chairs the New Jersey HIMSS Privacy, Security, and Compliance Committee and participates in national and local events that include New York, New Jersey, and Delaware Valley. So, Jerry, you often write for healthcare compliance and health IT publications, and you're an active member, contributor, and speaker at industry association events with HIMSS, HFMA, NJPCA, NJMHAA, and HCCA. That's a lot of acronyms, Jerry, and a lot of organizations that you support.
Sure is.
You can find Jerry on LinkedIn and check out his group, HIPAA 411. That's pretty cool. Martin, you're a consultant with Comply Assistant, correct?
Absolutely.
Gotcha. And you have served as a CIO with a hospital and health system in Jersey City, correct?
Yeah.
So that's awesome. What was your focus there?
Oh, well, again, as a hospital, medium-sized hospital and in and out of health systems, our focus really was on the population at hand and ensuring the, you know, delivery of healthcare and stellar healthcare in a pretty constrained environment.
So, gotcha. Yep. Okay, cool. So what I'd like to do is get started on our conversation today. And what we're going to talk about, right, is really within today's world of risk, how information privacy and security has evolved over the years. And Jerry, I'd like you to set the stage, talk about the concept of governance and compliance that's remained constant, but both are continually being tested by an ever-increasing risk to information privacy and security. And I believe, right, I think we all believe it's mainly due to an increase in the locations of electronic protected health information. Bottom line, it's a numbers game?
Yes, it is a numbers game, Michael. And, you know, as we look back to the evolution of risk, we can look to the incidents that have occurred over the years. And, you know, in the early 90s, even before HIPAA was signed into law, someone sold the medical records of Arthur Ashe, great tennis player, to the National Enquirer. And his story came out that he was HIV positive. And of course, he did not.
That's right.
He wasn't. Yeah. So that was one incident. There were other incidents with celebrities like Britney Spears and President Clinton. The law that went into effect in 1996, the HIPAA law, primarily was meant for administrative simplification, which I won't get into, but HIPAA security and privacy were added on as a result of some of those incidents. Now, it took about 7 years for the law to become effective, and in that time frame, technology advanced to the point where, you know, mobile devices, laptops were being used, and One of the biggest number of incidents that during the 2000s were lost or stolen laptops that were not encrypted. And so anyway, the law was written that if there was more than 500 individuals in a breach in one state, that went on the HIPAA, the HHS Hall of Shame. And that was the number. So 500 was the number back in the first decade of the 2000s. Now, fast forward to 2015, and we see the beginning of the attacks, of cyber attacks. And really, that was a result of the Affordable Care Act in 2010 that brought meaningful use into play in the transitioning of hard copy medical records to electronic. And it was supposed to be a focus on HIPAA, on the security aspect of that transitioning, but that was more like a checkbox, to mm-hmm. complete for attestation. Yeah. Right. The attackers know, they know what's going on. They knew that healthcare had transitioned to electronic data, more locations, like you said, and they saw it as being ripe for attack. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's really started. It was 2015 was when we entered the world of cyber attacks. HHS formed CSA, which is the Cybersecurity Act. And lo and behold, this is, where everything continued to evolve. Of course, phishing attacks started to take place. And interesting thing was, it's always been kind of insiders, like even way back when in the 90s, insiders who worked in emergency departments would sell medical charts to lawyers so that they can go after the accident victims.
Really?
Yeah. Stuff like that. So it's been insiders. And when you look at phishing, it's come 360 to the point where it's still insider vulnerability when it comes to clicking on the wrong email and things like that. So up to today, recently we've seen 5 hospitals in New Jersey get hit in the past couple of weeks. So now it's hitting home to the New Jersey
really?
HIMSS. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
New Jersey HIMSS.
Just in the past couple of weeks.
So to me, I take that as now you're attacking our family. These are New Jersey HIMSS hospitals.
Yeah.
And,
but
this is what it is. The attackers know how to, find the gaps to get in. Hospitals, no matter what they do, are subject to, these smart attackers. So the risk now is more like the millions of records. It used to be 500. It mm-hmm. still is 500, but that doesn't make sense anymore because now you're talking about, millions
right.
at times.
Yeah. in all the discussions that I've had and with a lot of different folks and even with you, Jerry, the idea or the thought of it really, a lot of it having to do with people on the inside, right, of the organization
Correct.
Itself.
Correct.
It surprises me at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Even snooping still continues,
right.
in the EMR.
It still
continues.
So Marty, right?
With
all the increase in risks and the impact of these attacks, right? How can, from your perspective, how can healthcare organizations foster a culture of privacy and security among their employees, right? Those insiders.
Yeah. And like with many other leadership-led initiatives. It really starts with strong leadership and clear communication from the top.
Mm-hmm.
So leaders, they really must prioritize privacy and security initiatives and set the example for their employees to follow. So it starts from the top, from the CEO on down. Regular training and awareness programs.
Mm-hmm.
Are essential, really, to educate the employees about best practices. And best practices evolve as technologies evolve and vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. New vulnerabilities come about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So best practices and the importance of data protection. So, as Jerry was saying a bit earlier, as we transition to an electronic format more and more so, some folks lost sight that they need to protect that PHI, which is now EPHI. And since the paper wasn't in front of them and, they just left, for example, their monitor on and open for others to see, maybe accidentally. Right. But then, you know, folks can obviously see that EPHI out in the open. So there were data protection strategies and tactics came about. Encourage open communication so employees feel comfortable reporting security issues or potential security issues, and to seek guidance. Not, you know, we don't expect, you know, every employee to know the nuances of cybersecurity and how to handle potential breaches and such. But they should feel comfortable enough that they don't feel like there's possible retaliation or something like that. If they report something through their management chain, or maybe even leapfrog. Of course, many privacy and security officers also have privacy lines that maintain anonymity so that they can feel hopefully more comfortable without sharing their name and duty litigation.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, it's funny, you know, in every day, you know, we're all subject to, you know, phishing attacks from one form or another, right? Constantly, you know, even in our private communications, all that stuff, you know, people looking to find out as much as they can about us. And, you know, a lot of times I have to do a double take when I see some of the emails that I get, you know, some of the inquiries. It's never ending, but, you know, I think people sometimes just get overwhelmed and then find themselves, oh, what did I do? And worry about, you know, the potential consequences of them saying, hey, I might have made a mistake, or, you know, and what that may mean to them personally on the job, you know?
Yeah. And another type of vulnerability is that just folks in the organization becoming numb, if you will, to all the potential attacks.
Yep.
And so, you know, their security posture, if you will, gets reduced that way. So, again, you know, having strong leadership and clear communication to maintain that culture so that it's, you know, upfront is really critical over the long term.
Do you find that it's difficult to get the leadership to even just commit to the idea of the awareness training, what's really the basics, right, for the organization to make sure that they're on the right track?
Well, it depends. And, you know, leadership is different from organization to organization. And, you know, there are other priorities, maybe to install a new MRI or something like that. But in the effort to do those types of things, having that privacy and security, again, up front is clearly important. And as Jerry was saying a little bit earlier with the more current attacks in New Jersey, you know, it becomes personal almost to a lot of the leadership. And, you know, like, you know, us personally, as employees or as citizens, you know, when you feel that you've been attacked and something has happened and you're in the middle of it, you feel like the victim, not just the organization. So, you know, having, again, a strong emphasis from leadership, supported by strong departmental and executive management, in the privacy, security, and such areas, you know, to keep that, you know, visibility of the culture up front, it's absolutely critical in this aspect. I mean, even the Department of Homeland Security has recently, like in the past year or two, has recognized that the vulnerabilities of healthcare and the attacks on healthcare, they've labeled it as a life-threatening thing now. And we've seen that.
Really?
Because, you know, in some of these attacks, you know, hospitals pretty much shut down elective procedures and stuff like that. You know, the ED is open maybe, but they've had to divert patients to other facilities. So it's not a nice thing.
No, no, that's crazy. So Jerry, what from your perspective, what are some of the key challenges that organizations face when they're trying to build and maintain a privacy and security culture?
I believe that healthcare is probably one of the lowest types of organizations to budget properly for cyber. Part of the problem is that they have a tough time with the bottom line. And I know over the past couple of years, their costs have increased dramatically by having to hire contracted nursing at much higher expense, reducing their bottom line. It's a balancing act between clinical and other aspects, including properly funding cybersecurity. So the attack is known that healthcare has a limited budget. There's so many things that need to be done to protect with limited resources. Now, you know, they do outsource, obviously, you have to, and you want to outsource to get the unbiased opinions of subject matter experts from the outside. But, you know, when you're talking about like third-party security risk management, third parties are causing over 60% of breaches. And that means what does a hospital have to do? They have to, from a compliance standpoint, vet vendors from a security standpoint and privacy standpoint, onboarding, number one. And that's the best time because that's when the vendor is looking to get the deal. And then periodically over time for change management. But when you talk about having hundreds of vendors to vet and, you know, limited staff, you know, it's pretty much impossible for them to do it on their own. They need to get some good tools. They need to potentially outsource a lot of that and get the results of that. And if they don't do it, and it sounds, you know, unfair to some degree, but if the vendor causes a breach because of a vendor vulnerability, if they cause the breach and the hospital is impacted and they get audited, the hospital, and they're found to have not implemented a program to vet vendors, they're going to be deemed negligent, you know, with that.
Yeah. Seems you like know, it's a catch 22, right? Because
it's a catch 22. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and even from a skills perspective, right? Do you have the skills in house even to do that assessment?
Right? Yeah. And, you know, hospitals have been penalized lots of money, lots more than it would cost to outsource a third party program if they can't do it themselves. But, you know, the CISOs, first of all, I always believe that the CISOs should be an executive in the organization. They should not just be an IT. They should be like an internal auditor, unbiased. Mm-hmm. Yep. Able to look at everything from an outside perspective, even though they're inside, have that power like a leadership and be able to call it, you know, as it is. So that's an important aspect of it too. But the bottom line is I feel like the CISOs are, you know, swimming upstream and they have so many things to be concerned about that it's such a tough thing to properly fill the gaps and all the gaps, you know, they really have no choice but to figure out in priority order high, medium, and low, go after the high. But, you know, again, the attack is now that healthcare is struggling with resources, and that's where they, you know, that's where the number one target is these days.
Yeah, that's a shame that how I get it, right? There's a lot of there's money to be made and there's a lot of greed out there and there's people that, you know, rather spend their time doing things that just focus on some quick dollars and even at the risk of putting people's lives at risk, you know.
Right, and HHS is calling cybersecurity patient safety and lives.
It isn't
the focus is still on, of course, the data, EPHI being breached, but it's also patient safety and lives.
Gotcha. So Marty, can you talk a little bit about some metrics that should be part of the program, right? A governance report, you know, looking at whether it's a report card, a dashboard, you know, what would make sense for a, you know, an internal committee to get at least an idea of where they sit as an organization from a cybersecurity perspective.
Sure. So I guess we'll hit the metrics first.
Sure.
I'll just go through a list, a little description.
Okay. So
incident response time is one of the metrics. It measures how quickly the organization can detect and then respond to any of the cybersecurity or security incidents. Employee training completion rates. That's a mouthful. Basically, the number of employees who complete their privacy and security training. As we were discussing earlier, you know, workforce management and training is important for, you know, employees to keep current, really, with what's going on in the world of privacy and security. So they're mainly annual training requirements, depending upon their role. It could be more frequent than annual. Then there's compliance audits, where there's the monitoring of results of any of the internal and external compliance audits that are being conducted by the organization. Data breach rates, of course, we hope the answer is zero, but that's unfortunately not very realistic. So you measure the frequency and the impact of the data breaches over time. And then feedback and reporting, where, you know, you're again encouraging employees to report their security concerns and monitor those number of reports you've received from the employee. That's a good measurement of how your culture is doing of compliance and security. So that, you know, obviously the larger number of reports received, the more folks feel comfortable about, you know, sending those reports forward. So other metrics that could be included are things like, we'll get a little bit more into the weeds, gap analysis, right? If you're evaluating and assessing your posture. Cost analysis, as Jerry was saying, he's, you know, we're under a constrained financial model right now in healthcare. So cost analysis is really important. And going with that is a criticality listing of, let's say, the top five areas of concern to the organization and the committee. EPHI vulnerability, those types of assessments, physical security findings. You know, believe it or not, physical security and still hard copy paper are still a vulnerability and have to be included.
You would think that it's real easy for an insider to pick up a, you know, a folder, a piece of paper, and walk out the door, as opposed to having to have a bit of a computer science degree to access a database, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe somebody in registration or patient access has, you know, propped open a door because it's too hot in the room right now.
Somebody
can sneak through. There's a whole bunch of that type of stuff that still needs to be looked at. Of course, policy and procedure audits, because, you know, we all implement and we upgrade systems, and not just systems, but processes, right? Especially, particularly when you have a lot of, you know, merger, you know, M&A activity and stuff like that, and changes. Change management reporting, you know, the change management committee or the change management process is critical, because, you know, as you're going through change management, you're also, again, introducing potential vulnerabilities because, you know, the process changes or the data or the structure changes, and you need to make sure that the security and, you know, data, you know, process working.
A lot of times when you're making system changes, right, you have to move data. And the fact that you're moving data perhaps to a temporary environment you know, mm-hmm. which may not necessarily be within the, you know, the capabilities or the world, you know, the secure environment, then you're exposed.
Yeah. And a lot of people seem to think, you know, I don't have a physical data warehouse here in my facility. We're doing things in the cloud and stuff, but you know, these test environments, for example, training environments as you're going through upgrades and implementations, they may actually reside on the same physical device or may not, but they may, as the production environment. And if, you know, they reduce their security posture saying, it's only a training platform.
Right.
You know, that again, speaks to that culture of privacy and security, you know, just maintaining that type of posture, regardless of, you know, if an individual thinks it doesn't matter.
Gotcha, yeah.
And then medical device security, of course, more and more biomedical devices are IT-oriented and attached to our, you know, EHRs and other aspects. And so, you know, that's another vulnerability or path that can be exploited, that it can be attended to.
Yeah, more and more technology is being pushed to the edge within the environment, right?
The IT technical state of affairs, really, you know, a metric or a set of metrics that lets the leaders know, again, where we stand as an organization, for example, in IT infrastructure and doing those gap analysis and cost analysis and stuff.
Cool.
See where the vulnerabilities are at and prioritizing those. I already talked about workforce training, business continuity, and disaster recovery planning. You know, you don't want to know where your gaps are when you're in the midst of having to implement a disaster recovery or business continuity plan. So, you know, going through those annual tests, doing the tabletops, maybe doing a warm test, maybe doing a hot test every so often, is again important so that when, God forbid, you know, those things occur, you can still function as an organization.
Right. Yeah. You know, a lot of folks, when you're presenting them with those types of exercises, you know, the enemy there is time, right? No one has the time, but generally, you know, once they go through it, they feel that it is time well spent, because it's not just the ability to handle a an event, but it also sometimes gives them a clearer perspective on what they should be changing to actually optimize or improve their current workflow or their, you know, whatever the process might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's not just systems oriented. It could be, you know, HVAC. It could be the actual physical security aspects. Yep. It could be transportation and fuel status.
Right. That's good stuff.
So, Michael, sorry, Marty, but I was going to add on to something you just said.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what I wanted to mention is that all those items that Marty mentioned are, in a sense, an agenda for governance steering committee meeting, quarterly or whatever. Now, probably you can't cover every single one of them in one meeting, but depending on what's the priority for that meeting, we have on our website some free tools, and one of them is a sample quarterly governance report card, and it actually lists everything that Marty just talked about, including the medical devices, which is where the patient safety and lives come into play with the devices if they're down, and we are going to update it. We're going to add one more item that is hot today, and that's AI. And to have on there, you know, AI vulnerability, you know, audits, and determine, because this, the AI is just going to continue to be one of the hottest topics going forward, as we know. And
It is. It's you know, if you look at AWS, you look at Azure, you look at Google, you know, part of their strategy is to make it easier for organizations to include one form or another, you know, one discipline or another of AI within their capabilities, right? Mm-hmm. And they're making it easier, but they're also then creating more vulnerabilities
across. Yeah, that's right. It's only as good as the data set that it's looking at.
Yeah, and they're creating more data, right?
Yeah,
more and more. They're evolving it, and
yeah. It could be possible that an attacker gets into a data set, changes the data set. Now the algorithms are,
right?
You know,
right.
So right.
It's going to be, you know, it is already challenging. You know, there's so many benefits to the advances in the technology. That's great, but then, you know, along with that comes additional responsibility, risks, and you know, and how does an organization, you know, keep up? It's tough. I mean, that is a daunting challenge, right? Because it just moves so fast. But that's why, you know, we've got organizations and experts like the both of you to help us through this, right?
Exactly. Thanks, Mike.
That's why we're having this discussion, you know.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, when you look at all those items again that Marty mentioned, that kind of indicates who should be at the meeting when they meet, because it's covering the CFO when it comes to what the gaps are and what the costs are. Mm-hmm. So when the upcoming budget season, they understand, you know, where the money should be spent.
Right.
You know, you have the compliance should be there, the CISO, the IT, you know, CIO, the leadership, COO, even, I don't know, potentially the CEO should sit in on those.
You would think, because, you know, you know, aren't they basically, they're all responsible, you know, to a
yeah, they're responsible,
event, you know, even personally.
Yeah.
Right? So, oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, you would think. But it's like anything else that, and to me, you know, from my perspective, I think that time is always the issue and the concern. I don't have the time. We don't have the time. Where do I find the time? You know, and I think everyone realizes and understands this is so important. But then again, you know, when there's other priorities that, you know, have to do with the organization that are important, you know, a lot of times, you know, what you should be doing on a day-to-day basis gets pushed to the side.
Mm-hmm. You know. Very true.
Yep. Yep. Well, this has been a really good conversation. You know, I appreciate both of your time, if that's the way you say that. But one thing I neglected to ask, Jerry, can you just remind everybody of your website?
Sure. It's www.complyassistant.com.
Perfect.
And the free tools are, you know, when you get there, you know, you'll see resources and then free tools, and then you can get the report card and download it.
That's awesome. You know, being able to at least, you know, have that those set of tools available so folks can at least, you know, get their heads wrapped around what they need, what they might need to do, and how to at least kick off a program of sorts. That's really good. So, you know, we're basically kind of at the end of our time here today. I would like to, you know, there's so many, and Marty, with all the different topics that you covered, you know, we can dive into one or more of those and follow up with another podcast. I'd really like to do that soon. And I really do think this is of great interest to our membership. So, but that does wrap up our discussion for today. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Stay tuned for more episodes in this podcast series. And please, by all means, check out our other podcasts on your favorite podcast platform. We are New Jersey Hymns, that's NJHIMSS on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Podbean, TuneIn, plus Alexa. Please subscribe to our channel on those platforms and hit those like buttons. Subscribe, please. And oh, you can also find our podcasts on our website, njhymns.org. That's njhimss.org. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. This was great, and we definitely have to get back and have another session.
Sounds good, Mike. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Okay. All right.